Welcome to What Should I Do, Boss? The only podcast advising you to take the deal. Get your dignity back. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're covering season four, episode 4-6.
Yep.
And chapters 43-45.
I think that's accurate.
These numbers are all confusing me. What'd you think of the next three episode chunk?
I was already enjoying season four more than season three, and I feel like I'm fully invested at this point in time. This feels a lot like season one, in that it's just really watchable and it's really bingeable, and there's still some things that don't make sense to me, but shit, I mean, the president got almost assassinated in episode four. What more do you want from this show?
Right.
He's having ammonia fueled visions and wrestling with inner demons.
We will talk about
Claire's,
those visions.
Claire's
man.
Running roughshod over the entire federal government apparatus
and Russia.
She rules the world like a queen,
pretty much, and China, right?
Like
it's crazy. I would say I'm enjoying it as much as I enjoyed season two, which was slightly less than season one. I was really, really engaged with season one.
Let me ask you something as your friend. Mm-hmm. Is that because the actual quality of the product, or is it because you've gotten bruised from the sillier stuff of season two, season three, making you not want to go to season one comparisons?
I think that's probably it. Okay. The latter. Season three was just not great for most of it, and like, coming back into it, I am engaged, and when Lucas, you know, takes a shot at the president, I was like, holy fuck, you know,
yeah.
Meacham's dead, the president's shot, wow. And then from there, it just got more and more interesting, but I'm not willing to say, like, I'm as engaged in season one, because season one, you know, fresh eyes,
sure.
Excitement about a new show with Kevin Spacey
it's
and Netflix.
Look, and, it was very distinct and different.
Yeah, so I won't quite go there, but I see why you're going there, because it is a very engaging plot line at this point.
It makes me wonder how much of last season was completely wasted, because really the only thing of substance that came of that was the setup of the Russian and Chinese situation.
Right.
Which I don't know that you needed 13 episodes to do.
I mean, they did. I can't remember how much of this was in season two or season three. Did they do a lot of stuff with Jackie and Remy last year? They did, didn't they?
They did.
But so, Jackie, I mean, that's
also
set up,
prominent
but
in season two.
Right.
But that you're was, right. I mean,
some of that stuff is set up, but it feels mostly inconsequential. Now, I haven't seen anything past episode six.
I mean, what if, like, so I kept on thinking, like, man, what if they had compressed last season's events to seven episodes? Mm-hmm. And or eight episodes or whatever, and we had the cliffhanger of Frank being shot. now some people would be like, oh, well, maybe that's going to jump the shark, but
yeah,
I mean, that would have been a hell of a thing. And there had been no, like, oh man, I don't even know what they're going to do with season four.
It would be interesting, because I feel like with a little too much time to think about it, you might start to throw some shade at it.
Yeah, my big problem. Even though I think shooting Frank is the shot in the arm the show needed, the shot in the gut it needed, is I feel like I'll never understand what the hell Claire was trying to do.
Unless, with the divorce? Is that
well, not just the divorce, just she had some plans on higher office.
Right.
And I don't think, for all the reasons we said last episode, that that vice president was what she really wanted, because she had to know that was impossible. What the hell is she going to? What the hell was she scheming to do the first three episodes? And will we ever know?
Right. That's...
Is it possible that this assassination attempt is one of her machinations?
No,
I don't think so either.
I think that's impossible. I mean, maybe not like physically impossible for the show to connect those dots, but I just don't see it.
Would you feel betrayed if you found out in episode 9 that she had somehow engineered these events to happen?
I suppose it depends on how they unveil it.
But you know what?
But yeah, pretty much.
I mean, like we were talking about last episode with us not liking their trend of keeping us in the dark, that would be the ultimate.
It would, yeah.
But it's not like they haven't put some kind of hints that she's been up to something. I mean, I know she's up to something. She was up to some long-term plan that we as the audience were not privy to right up until the point that the president got shot.
Yeah.
So the conspiracy theorist, what little there is in me, wants to be like, aha, you know.
Let's say
platinum blondes can't melt steel beams, kind of thing.
Jesus. Let's say for a second she didn't, and this wasn't part of her plan, which I think is the case. How do you feel about the show undermining her plans with Frank getting shot? Like, do you feel that that's a waste of the first three episodes and Claire and their struggle, or do you feel like that's just kind of how reality goes and you're on board
with it? That's exactly how I think about it. I have equal measure of those two thoughts. Number one, right. It's kind of admirable that shit happens. The best laid plans of mice and men. But also, what was she wanting to do? Because, as you know, Frank's always had a lot of that too. I mean, he schemes, but he also capitalizes. But we've always been, you know, we've always known what Frank's scheme was. Although I guess in the first season, did we really? Once he got screwed over because he wanted to be Secretary of State. Mm-hmm. Once he got passed over, him and his wife had that, you know, cigarette smoking session where they outlined the plan to get their revenge.
Uh-huh.
But we didn't really know how they're going to do about it or how they're going to go about it. So,
right.
And then the things that they eventually did, I don't know that they planned every single step of that way. Like, they didn't know they were going to use Pete Russo the way they did, and certainly didn't know they're going to have to kill him. And, you know, and the same thing with Zoe, et cetera, et cetera. I wonder if why I guess I have a problem with Claire just saying, I'm going to be the vice president of the United States in some way. And then not knowing exactly how she's going to do it, and then seeing her do it in some way that I know she couldn't have planned for, but I didn't have a problem with Frank doing that in season one.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, maybe that is just, you know, fresh eyes sort of thing. Like, giving the show a little bit of room, as opposed to now where we want to we want it to be a thing one way, and it's not doing that.
Well, the only thing I can say that's different is that in the aforementioned, you know, season one, you had Frank and Claire, the two main characters of the series. They're conspiring together.
Right.
Whereas in this go-around, we've got Neve Campbell and Claire scheming. You got the one B character scheming with a D character against the 1A character.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels like we're less we're less co-conspirators and more kind of interlopers. So I guess I don't feel as attached to the plan. That's the only thing I can think of.
That's understandable.
Should we just so my outline is basically just kind of like an overview of the plot and then some deep dives on character stuff. Do you mind proceeding with that?
Yeah, that's basically. I have a few sections lined out, but they're mostly around like Frank and Claire. So
the early goings, we see the Dunbar has decided to kind of hedge your bets with this Lucas situation by making what turns out to be a fateful call to the Attorney General to try to get her to, you know, investigate the smoke and see if there's fire.
Yep.
Frank signs an executive order confirming that he's going to land this Russian dissenter in a nest of other dissenters. I'm not sure. Where is this at? Is it in Italy or France? Yugoslavia?
Shit, I don't know. It was one of the. It has a border with Russia. I don't.
What they call that, the Baltic states.
I don't think it was actually Ukraine, but
okay. So yeah, but it's the important thing is that they're intentionally fomenting Petros paranoia,
right?
So Frank has decided to cut Claire's legs off by giving Leanne a job offer to work for the presidential campaign, which he thinks is going to be a step up. She shocks him by being loyal to Claire and presenting, all right, I'll work for you. Here is the, what would they call it?
Condition?
Yeah, the condition, which is Claire will announce her divorce on Super Tuesday.
Right.
Which would be hilarious.
Which, you know, something similarly bad.
Yeah.
Is in the works.
So Frank responds by effectively imprisoning her using the Secret Service. And my question to you is there some kind of threat against the family with this Lucas situation that Frank is using, or is Frank just manufacturing a threat against her life to keep her in prison?
I think he manufactured it.
Okay.
100%.
Because ironically, there is a credible threat to his life in the form of Lucas, who shows up at a at a speech he was giving out of college, and he went to go engage the crowd and try to do the, you know, the Nixon thing where he goes and tries to talk to these screaming young people, and Lucas shoots him. Meacham
goes down. Meacham goes down for the count.
Now, did you know that you can actually see Lucas almost from the beginning?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like my girlfriend noticed it, and we watched it, and it's like a Where's Waldo situation. He starts off way back in the crowd, and he kind of works himself close, and all the shots, he's kind of in the background, creeping closer, and it's kind of...
I just thought they filmed the whole thing ominously. Like, I was expecting... I wasn't expecting exactly this, but I expected something bad to go down here.
I was totally shocked. I mean, I thought bad, like maybe someone would throw a milkshake on him or something like that, but like getting shot was not on my radar.
Right. I wouldn't go so far as to say I saw that coming. Okay. It was just like they were, you know, shooting from outside the crowd, but like a line back, and there were just like a lot of shots that fill you with kind of
a lot of shots of POV dread from the crowd. Yeah. And I actually think that this was directed, the last two actually have been directed by Robin Wright. And I thought she did a really good job of kind of flaunting the rules of action shooting to make this deliberately confusing. Like, you know, she would flip the point of view and break the plane of the camera and have you thinking stuff's happened to the right and it's actually happened to the left. Because I think that if you're in a crowd and there's shots being fired in the president, like, it's just mass chaos and confusion.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought that was very confusingly filmed but intentionally done. And pretty well done. There's some interesting commentary that I saw on the internet about how House of Cards tries to use a lot of real life institutions and news agencies and colleges and whatnot to ground it in reality.
Yeah.
But this one, like the whole arc of him being assassinated, they completely went and, like, you know, they didn't use the hospital that the president would. They used a fictional hospital. They used a fictional university. They had Charlie Gibson, formerly of ABC News, who I thought killed the reaction of him, you know, the president being killed. But he's on a fictitious news agency. He's not with MSNBC or CNN. And people said that it was probably because the filmmakers didn't want this to be used in some kind of War of the Worlds style prank. Can you imagine, like, it? I mean, how easy it would be to insert a picture of Obama's face?
Right.
In this news report, and if it was actually Wolf fucking Blitzer with CNN talking about the president being shot twice in the abdomen, how it could like really fucking, I mean, I don't really think the world would end, but
like right, that's the thing. I don't know if it were me, that wouldn't be a concern. It might be more a concern to kind of maybe inspire something like that.
That's
to actually happen. That's what I would be thinking about.
I think it's funny that I think it's commendable that they worried about it in a world where people pass off the Onion articles as like genuine shit on Facebook,
right.
You know. But I don't know if they did it intentionally. They kind of went into fantasy land to avoid real life confusion. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I get it. That's nice.
So Frank then fights for his life. He's lost his liver. It's too badly damaged, and they have to put him on emergency support and put him on tier 1 organ transplant list.
Yeah.
Now, I was shocked because my first thought is like, well, put him on a dialysis machine and he can live
right.
forever.
Is there no simulation of a human liver?
Apparently not.
What the fuck are we doing?
There
people?
Is very well. I guess it's
we
a
can
really
simulate
complex,
a heart.
It's really complex organ.
We can simulate kidneys.
Sure.
We can simulate a lot of things. The liver seemed like it would be one of those things.
There are experimental protocols being worked on right now.
Good.
But it's a really tricky thing to do, and there's a lot of complications. Like, there's one that does like 90% of the job the liver does, but it leaves you with too much albumin in your blood, which can kill you. I mean, it seems like, you know, your blood is a cocktail that has to be just... or you're going to die.
Right. So cycle out the blood, too. Like, get a combo going.
Like, yeah, I mean, again, it's fucking harder than... This isn't like, you know, changing the variable name of a PHP form, man.
No, the body's basically a machine. Let's get this going, people.
But yeah, no, I actually did some research. I'm like, well, I'll be damned. The liver is a big, complicated thing that's very hard to replace. At least synthetically. So I thought that was pretty cool. And also I looked up all the things they said about, you know, the ammonia in his blood causing the hallucinations and like the tremors that he was experiencing. That's all like real life. Hmm. Like, you know, first hit was things around liver failure.
Nice.
So I thought that they did a really good job. What did you think of his hallucinations? Was that just...
I liked most of them. I actually started liking them a lot more when Zoe showed up. And the then Civil Russo War, showed up.
The Civil War reenactor stuff has always felt a little ham-fisted and forced to me.
Honestly, I didn't get that. Like, is this Stamper? Because at one point he sits down in the chair just like Stamper, and cut over and it's Stamper. Like, how does he feel about Stamper and the things he's done? Like,
see, I tried to analyze it by that, and I couldn't. I just thought that was indicating that he's taking real-life things that he's seeing and hearing and transposing it into his head.
Right.
And, you know, he had this kind of spiritual situation where he, out of nowhere, it turns out he's a big Civil War buff, and his dad, like a forefather of his, fought on this side, and it turns out that the actor was supposed to be, I'm with you. The Civil War shit was kind of dumb.
Mm-hmm.
I got much more engaged when it became Zoe as Claire and Frank, and Pete Russo as, I guess, Doug. I thought that was pretty cool.
Right, yeah. And just, like, I thought it was really artfully done, too. That scene, I don't even know what I would compare it to. It's like a horrifying Renaissance painting or something where they're mashing their faces against his and he's crying out and, like... That was just a really disturbing image.
I feel like I'm going to this a lot.
It's
maybe
Antichrist.
Maybe I'm
Is that where you're going?
No. Maybe I'm just trying to really get you to watch it, but it reminded me a lot of the finale sequence in Penny Dreadful.
Oh, okay.
Where this guy's being forced to confront the bad things in his past and you know, view it not from his own sense of... not from within his world of rationalizations and justifications, but just naked, like... These are lives you fucked up, man.
It felt to me like a painting of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse or something.
Huh.
Like, not exactly visually, not like mirroring anything, but like the sense, the feeling I got from it.
Who is the... Who's war?
I think we know. Petrov. But he's not in there yet.
No, that's what I'm saying. He's riding in on that red horse. With a communist star on it. It's ass. Which My Little Pony would that be? Oh, shit. I can't pronounce my communist stuff.
Proletariat?
Bourgeoisie.
I don't know.
Bourgeoisie. Yeah, that's what I was trying to say.
Okay.
I thought it was good how they kind of blended it to be seduction and also blended some of his fights with Claire into it. Like, this is all just a big mental stew. It's
right, and guilt and all sorts of things are in there. It's really good.
Let's see. What else we want to talk about? I want to talk about this whole Frank as a status one and being third on the list of liver transplant. Uh-huh. I find this whole idea wildly implausible. Like... You can't tell me that the president gets shot and needs a liver. He's not instantly put on a fucking Omega list that he just gets first dibs on any and all livers. Really? We're talking about a man who's guarded by a wall of flesh and blood human beings that their job is to get between the president and bullets.
Did you do any research on this?
Because I did not.
I didn't either. And I feel like...
This is my gut feeling that there's...
Right. I don't think that's a good feeling to go on. Like, the show is... I'm sure that the show did research on it.
You think so?
I'm absolutely sure that they looked into it.
Because here's the thing. The president is more important than anyone else.
Right. I agree.
It's not the
person. You're not getting an argument.
It's the office. Like, this, the chance of instability and the threats to national security.
You're taking a very argumentative tone where I agree with you there.
I'm arguing the
show,
not
you. What I don't agree with is that your gut feeling overrides what the show is telling us. Because I think the show, in most respects, is very accurate when it portrays government and laws and all sorts of stuff.
Like, really?
So let's go with the show, and let's say, okay, well, this is a case.
Okay.
Because otherwise, I mean, you throw Stamper's shit out the window, you throw the Secretary of Health out the window, and, like, none of that would matter because he'd be on some list. But I was actually thinking about, like, who gets... Is there anyone in the world who gets better health care than the president?
Probably not.
I don't think so. Like, on the fucking planet, probably nobody.
I mean, you may, if you want to put the other like first world countries leaders up there,
it's close, but yeah, it's real close there. But I mean.
I mean, I'm not going to. I'm not going to say that the top level level one trauma centers in the UK, France, Germany,
right,
Switzerland, they're probably that they're not good. Like as good or if not even better in some areas.
Some areas, yeah.
Whereas I imagine the United States is better in others.
Right. So I was just like thinking about how good the healthcare he's getting must be.
Oh yeah.
And then, like,
wait till he gets the bill for it, though. Holy shit, he'll be.
That's the thing. I don't know that he will.
He'll be wishing he passed single payer.
Yeah,
fuck America works. Get single payer healthcare going.
Right, he's on the government healthcare.
Sure.
He is. He is on government healthcare, but it's a much better tier.
Oh no! All those bastards have top notch.
Right,
top notch healthcare.
Yeah. So he was in good hands most of that time, and I kept like thinking. Man, there's really nothing they can do for him. Like, apparently you can't simulate the liver and he's just going to deteriorate. And I guess there's this top level list and he's third. And, what do you think about Stamper going in there and bullying Secretary of Health?
Well, before we get there.
Okay. Stamper goes in and wants to donate.
I want to be a living donor, which is a thing.
You're injecting yourself with scotch every chance you get. So go, your liver's worthless. Even to you, it's worthless, Stamper. To the president, it'd be less than worthless. That's a joke, obviously.
Sure.
But it's interesting to me that he was unwilling to do what the kid who we see blow his head off did.
I actually was very convinced that when the doctor said, look, you know, we can't take your liver because the president needs a whole healthy one.
Right.
That's his only option, which kind of sounded like bullshit to me, but I don't know the medical science. I thought the next scene was going to be Frank or Stamper blowing his head off. I really did.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to have a living will and that was going to be the big thing. When the kid put the gun in his mouth, I was like, wait, have I seen this kid before?
Uh-huh.
It actually took me a while to realize, oh, they're showing us how he's getting his liver.
Me too. It was like a scene maybe two after that where I was like, oh, okay, that's what they're doing.
No, I've got some, but as far as him threatening the Secretary of Health, since I think this is absurd, I think I actually am pretty supportive of what Doug was doing.
Like, okay,
I don't give
I'm
a shit
not,
about this guy and his family and his cute kids. He's
right.
Not going to solve the Russian crisis for me.
Right. Here's the problem I have.
Millions of Americans could lose their job or lives in a war for this one guy's fucking... No.
Sure. But you're...
And that's the other thing. It's like, if you and before you everyone attacks me for... know that in case of nuclear war, there's a list of people that are going to get rounded up and put underground for safety, and you and I and nobody else and 330 million people, Americans, are not on that fucking list.
Right.
So we already tacitly say this guy's more important than us. He gets a 747.
I'm not arguing against that, sure.
He gets military helicopters. He gets, again, a bunch of bodyguards / butlers / slaves that care for every single need that he has. Like, we all agree that the person that is the president is one of the most important people in the world. So
we're
going to really quibble over fucking... I mean, I get that the doctors couldn't make that decision because they had the Hippocratic Oath. The bureaucrats absolutely can be like, we're taking this liver, pound sand.
Well, they can, but then they'll be prosecuted because it is illegal what they're doing.
That is in fact the case.
Right. That's what the show told me. So
sure.
I'm going on that. I didn't look up, you know, whether or not the president's on top of the list or not.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's the problem I have with it is the hypocrisy of it and the hypocrisy that's all over the actions of people in this show. I mean,
what is the hypocrisy? What's the hypocrisy in
breaking the law, like making the law for everyone else and breaking it yourself?
I guess. I mean, this is like the least egregious thing that's been done in that vein.
But every time it comes up, which it comes up over and over and over again, it irks me a little bit more. And that's part of what the show is trying to do. I don't make any bones about that.
I thought it was oddly touching and hilarious that the Secretary of Health sent Doug a picture of the guy who died.
Uh-huh.
Like, Doug Stamper gives one shit about...
He'd choke him at himself.
He killed the woman he loves for some weird mommy-based psychosexual alcohol-fueled reason.
Buried her in the desert.
He would kill 100 of these guys. and take fractional pieces of their liver and stitch them together himself and put it in if that was going to save Frank.
Yeah.
And like he's just as soon as she's not even done with her fucking guilt speech before he's like, you fucking delete that right now.
Yep.
Like, what the hell is wrong with you? Some people don't know Doug like we know Doug.
Right. And that's the other thing that bothers me about it is just the raw, naked exertion of power in the face of ethics and the face of what may or may not be right. I mean, you can argue about it, but certainly what is legal. That really annoys me. That annoys the shit out of me.
That's funny.
And the show is doing that on purpose.
I might be in for a bunch of hate mail because I was really unprepared for your level of discontent with the liver situation, man. I mean, if you represented the average listener, I'm in for a shit show.
I don't know that I am. It's just something that personally bothers me. Because I'm like,
the president comes in and says...
Abuses of power always bother me in every way possible.
Sure.
And don't confuse this. So when I say this, and I want to reiterate this from last episode where I said this as well, don't confuse me saying I'm irked by something or I really have a visceral negative reaction to a character's decisions or specific things that are being done on the show, plot lines and stuff, with me actually not liking the show. There's a huge difference.
Yeah.
And I feel like people often, very often, write us in mistaking me saying negative things about the decisions of characters with me not liking the show. And that's not true.
One tip, I guess, and like usually when we're bitching about the show, we talk a lot about the writers. Like, I don't understand what the writers are thinking when we're bitching about characters or decisions characters are making, we talk about them as if they are characters with their own free will and agency.
Right. And I'm talking also about like the characters' decisions and the writers making the characters make those decisions, making me mad. So I can see why it might be a little confusing, but I still really like this plot line.
Sure.
So don't get me wrong. It's something Stamper would absolutely do. It's well written.
So then we have the resurgence of Donald Bly.
Oh, Jesus.
He has I'm shitting my pants face this entire episode and episodes to come. Like, he is running from this responsibility as fast as a human of his stature and athletic ability can do, right?
My note here says, oh my God, Donald Blythe is acting president. Like, not a good oh my God either.
No.
It was real interesting. So I love.
What do you think of his decision? I also want to know, like, what do you think of his decision? Because I was really critical of his decision making process here.
Okay. So to start off, when I realized that this was happening and they had to go brief him.
Yes.
I love seeing those scenes of a new president getting the info dump.
Right.
And just their head exploding.
I thought it was really unrealistic that they first didn't cover the aliens. At Area 51. Right. That's the first thing you got to know.
Moon landing.
Then who killed JFK. Uh-huh. And obviously how George Bush blew up the World Trade Center.
Sure.
Then you can get to the Russian situation in Germany.
Right. But it's doubly awesome here because Donald Blythe, we know, is just not equipped in any way to handle this shit.
No.
And he knows it. Everyone in this room knows it, and it's just a beautiful thing to see him shit his pants.
He's roughly as qualified to serve as president as Dale from The Walking Dead.
Yes.
With, like, if you got in his Bermuda or if you got in his Hawaiian shirt wearing ass and his bucket cap,
yep.
Sat him in that chair, he'd have the same I'm shitting my pants look on his face.
His shitting pants look, I think, is a little better than Donald Blythe, but, you know, they're both pretty good. And then when I realized, okay, this is Claire's opportunity to shine, and she's going to be the puppet master here.
And she sure as shit was.
And the way that they pit Claire against Stamper really worked for me.
And, like,
he realizes that his regime is being dismantled by Claire piece by piece here.
And Claire's doing it in such a way that Donald Blythe thinks he's being strong by essentially doing what she is telling him to.
Ugh.
Like, It's really masterful. She's really good.
If you left it up to Donald Blythe, Petrov would be, within the span of a week, Petrov would be both the vice president and chief justice of the Supreme Court of the United States of America.
And somehow we gave away Russia $1 trillion to bail him out.
Right. And all of our gas. We're paying $15 a gallon.
Yes, yes. So here's my thing. Donald Blythe sits down. He's briefed in his position that's within hours of happening. He's got 2 hours to make a decision on it. it's the height of arrogance and naivete that you're going to get a better understanding of this in this 2 hours than the people who have debate. Like, it seems like unless you think that this thing is immoral or illegal, and it doesn't seem like he's got like, at worst, the Secretary of State thinks it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
But the generals are saying this as like, I feel like you have to rubber stamp it.
I would think so.
Because what in the hell are you going to find out in 2 hours that these people didn't already pour through in weeks and months of planning this thing?
Mm-hmm.
The very fact that he's having trouble, you know, I don't know. It plays right into Claire's hands.
Yeah, sure. She jumps in right away.
And also, Doug did it. That's the beautiful thing about this season is this like chaos theory, like butterfly wing effect where everyone tries to do this one thing and it leads to all these disruptions. Like Doug tries to get Claire in there, not thinking that she would use the president's death to take advantage of the situation like Frank would do.
Yeah.
And he's just completely perplexed that she would do something like that. Can't believe it. It's great.
Yeah. Good stuff. And then his slow realization over the course of those three episodes that his plans are not going to be enacted here.
What do you think of the land the guy in China situation? I thought that was actually, I mean, it's one of those things where I don't know politics enough, especially this fictional geopolitics.
A
lot of people had problems with like the gas. It's like, oh, this is less relevant because our gas is cheap. And I'm like, we know what the America was like when gas got up to $4.50. Extrapolate. Right. Instead of Saudi Arabia doing what they're doing, the Russia's doing what they're doing, and now gas is $6 a gallon. Like,
yeah,
I feel like it's very, you know, fresh.
If I were Remy, I would get a different car. Step number one, get rid of that gas guzzling 5-liter Mustang.
But this is all recent developments. Like, it's only when we start fucking with China and Russia that this stuff has happened.
So it feels like the plan here, I think,
yes,
if I'm reading it correctly, is to get China to lean on Russia to release their drilling sites so that they can pull more gas out of the ground and also release their reserves to us.
And also get China to help out the bailout.
Right.
So they get access to
we don't pay all the bailout.
Exactly.
Because that's what Frank was trying to avoid.
Right. And I also like how this definitely kind of stitches together the plot from the last two seasons. Like season two is all about Tusk and China.
Right.
Which is suddenly super relevant now. Season three is all about the tensions in Russia. Now season four is all blending this stuff together in a fairly interesting and compelling way.
I think so. Yeah.
The only thing I don't like is that this seems like such a great plan that it's hard to believe that between, you know, Kathy, Durant, and, you know, Claire and Frank and everybody else that they wouldn't have come up with this better plan.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting because,
like, Claire's just had this detailed plan in her back pocket this whole time.
And how much is Frank blinded, both by his campaign and his problems with Claire? Like, their attention is kind of elsewhere at the moment.
Well, yeah, you can tell that he's not devoting nearly enough of his mental energy towards this Russian problem.
Yeah.
Like, he's super dismissive of
you
all
see
this.
A couple of meetings with him.
Yeah.
And he just makes the decision, and he goes out the room, and he starts plotting and scheming for other things.
Speaking of the, you know, whole unintended consequences and butterfly theory, I love the fact that the department is so, the scandal that underlines the assassination, the fact it was Lucas that killed him is just because not only is he in a fight for his physical life, he's in a fight for his political life, because if this gets out, you know, he's ruined with the cat. I mean, this is juicy shit. It's sensationalist. It's murder, which kind of works against Lucas or what he's trying to do, I imagine.
Right, they spin it as he's crazy.
But I thought it's interesting that the DOJ guys investigating Hammer and asking for his notes is what motivates him to start thinking about this again. Like he says in this
episode, Hammer's back, baby.
In the first episode, he's like, you know, the last thing I want to do is get involved. But you can already tell by the time, what's the woman who plays the mom on Fear the Walking Dead?
The journalist. Remember her real name. Her name on the show is Madison, but
yeah.
I don't know her real name. I
don't know her name in this show either. But when she's walking a dog with him, you can already tell that he's kind of denying everything, but the wheels are spit. So if the DOJ didn't show up and try to roll tough on him with the subpoenas and make him get his notes, does he ever get his notes out?
I don't think so. And I'm wondering, like, how much did Lucas think this out? Right? Did Lucas do this out of rage and you know, a feeling of impotence, or did he write this note knowing that he'd shoot the president and it would get attention and that would bring some people, might bring some shit to light?
I think you ruin your life, get sent to prison, risk your life at the hands of Armenian gangs and suck a dick. You have a reasonable expectation of some kind of justice coming from it.
Absolutely.
And if you're not going to get that justice, then you're going to take it into your own hands and get it yourself. And he came very damn... Were it not for the last vestiges of life, Meacham putting a couple rounds right center mass, he would have succeeded. Because he was lining up for the kill shot. And, you know, this big strapping Secret Service agent could barely restrain the fury of skinny old Lucas, you know?
Well,
that's the other thing.
He's
like,
very pissed off.
Speaking of the blow jay or the hand jay or whatever it was, the guy's lead up was like, most of these guys aren't nothing to look at. Are we talking about Lucas here? The sallow faced, pasty skin, stringy, greasy hair, giant nose. Like, that's. He's not.
I think you're selling him a little short, but I get your point.
Like, I just don't. I mean, again, it's not exactly my taste.
Right.
But
right.
I'm like, is he anybody's taste?
Probably.
Wasn't Zoe's taste.
He wasn't. Shame. Right. He obviously deserves some kind of justice, and sure. He's full of rage, but did he also have a plan? Like, clearly, he wrote the note. He wrote that report on Frank for a reason.
Yeah, obviously. Like, I'm with my own death and maybe Frank's too, I'm going to blow the lid off this thing because surely people will take a serious look at my allegations.
Right.
No one ever does.
Well, the hammer's back on it. We'll see.
That's the thing. Like, the hammer is the Hail Mary. He's the Hail Hammer because I think it's interesting because Dunbar throughout this is putting into a lot of difficult choices on how she should proceed with her campaign.
Yep.
And she makes the decision essentially to go for radical honesty. And it destroys her campaign.
So I feel like that might have been the right decision if she didn't.
I think it destroys her campaign. It doesn't.
Destroys her. There's no way.
When her chief of staff calls Seth at the end and is like, so you got anything for me? He's like, I'm hanging up now. That's pretty much her campaign's over.
Absolutely, this is the death knell.
But
and
why?
I think,
because does she come across like some conspiracy theory loon? Is that why her campaign's over?
No. I think it's the sympathy vote. I think the problem is she attacked Frank at the exact moment where he had the most sympathy.
Nobody wants, and no one wants to hear all this ridiculous stuff. They want to believe the crazy loon. I mean, this show does such a great job blending fantasy and reality. Because they're essentially saying, you know, it's like people like, well, wait a second, why did
Harvey Oswald.
Harvey Oswald, thank you. Mm-hmm. Why would he want to kill JFK?
Yeah.
And, you know, you got the Oliver Stone explanation. You got, well, he's just a crazy loner.
Sure.
Malcontent, frustrated in life, chump that chose to do this big splashy thing. Mm-hmm. And it seems like everybody's all too willing to believe that.
Right, with Lucas, it's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, right?
Well, and that's only because we know him to be correct.
Yes.
Otherwise, it would look like he's somebody. Just crazy. Yeah, if you heard tomorrow that some guy shot Obama, and he had this laundry list of bodies that he had been responsible for, you would be like, "This guy's a nut job."
Totally. Yeah. Because we've never heard anything about it, and like, there's never been any implication. Sure. So I. Right. Mm. I don't know. So I think the problem was the attack on Frank. I actually think her honesty was probably smart there.
Right. And then Doug's able to twist the attorney general's arm into testifying against a friend. Mm-hmm. Claire puts out the press release that frames Lucas as crazy. She also, at this point, uses Leanne to deploy blackmail material, these photos that were taken several episodes ago, against Remy while he's visiting his parents.
Yeah.
And now Remy is roped back in because Claire sees Tusk as a center point for her plan because Tusk has got a lot of powerful ties with Chinese politicians and businessmen that they're going to need on their side to get this thing rammed through, which is smart.
Yeah, I think they make a point of saying, look, we've tried to talk to the Chinese and they are unwavering. They just won't budge. Mm-hmm. And so then they have to get Tusk involved.
Sure. They got to get Tusked.
Yep.
He's going to go Tusk it up. Should we talk about Polyhop now? Polyhop is a blip on the radar. But Polyhop, it seems to be, is like a Google-type company. that is giving Conway, which is the Republican nominee.
Mm-hmm. Who have we even met him?
I don't know that we have.
Okay, they mentioned his name a couple times.
But he's the guy running for president on the Republican side, mm-hmm. and I guess he's either unopposed or he's already sewn up his primary, and he's the presumptive nominee.
Yeah.
But they are selling him metadata, and only him metadata, from their search and stuff. And I think, if true, that is a huge advantage.
So here's the problem I have with this.
Okay.
I think the biggest mistake they made in this particular thread of plot was mentioning Google in the same breath as Polyhop. I think that completely undermines them. Like,
why?
Because Polyhop doesn't have any market share. I mean, it's a tiny little thing compared to
They should have just made it Polyhop.
They should have made Polyhop Google.
Yeah.
The biggest search engine on the planet.
That's what's so crazy about Google is they're so big. How do you actually say that it's Google without being Google?
You just say Polyhop. You don't mention Google. You say, look, they have the bulk of the market share. When people go searching, they search here first. Like, make them out to be Google. Just change the name.
It's just so hard because Google...
Have Larry Page or Sergey Brin on the show.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Like, you could have like P-Mail, and you could have like, and it's like, you could mention like 80% of the world uses their smartphone, and it's like, oh, I've got one in my pocket, right. And he pulls out a
P-Droid. But when they mention...
Okay. It's shaped like
I've seen the Android graphic peeing like Calvin from Calvin and Hobbes.
Really? Well, I was thinking instead of an Android, the little droid. What do they call that? They have a name for that.
I don't know the name.
But like instead of that, it's the shape of a dick butt. the right. Little droid thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So I feel like that was the mistake, mentioning it in the same breath as Google. They should have made it Google.
Yeah,
because it undermines it. I mean, Google is the de facto search engine for the planet. Like, come on. Well, not the planet. The US.
I agree, but like, you run the risk of confusing people if you try to make I think if I heard Polyhop, and they didn't explicitly say it was Google, I would assume that Google isn't real in this world, and Polyhop is an upstart, which is the problem they have already.
Huh.
By saying that they're the next Google, because that's the thing. Like,
but I think you can say that they control the majority of the market share for search.
Like Google killed Yahoo, AltaVista, all those things like overnight. I remember I was there. Like everyone was using this other shit, and then Google came out, and like everyone's like, "This is so much better. We're fucked this shit."
Yeah,
and it's crazy. And that was before Gmail. It was before all the other stuff that they've done. But like, it was so good. And I feel like that's kind of like when, Facebook blew up. It's like suddenly all the other shit, Friendster, MySpace, all that just went away.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I believe that there could be a technology that would supplant Google if it was better than Google. And that technology in this world is P-Hop. Polyhop.
I guess, but... They even say that it's a very small market share.
Yeah, I just that's don't true because think... this only works if they have massive market share.
Yeah,
because think of that. If Google as a company backed a political campaign,
oh my god,
and you can craft your. I mean, it's very Orwellian, right? Like,
And that's the thing they got right is the influence it would have.
Sure, and it doesn't even it doesn't even have to identify you as an individual. Like the fact that they can craft messages to appeal, like. They can A/B test shit all day long. That's a scary thing about politics is that you're not the idea that instead of putting forth ideas and letting them win compete in the marketplace of ideas that they would tell you exactly what you want to hear and effectively brainwash an entire nation into an agenda that they have no real plans for completing, which I guess I'm describing how American politics works, only without all the brainwashing stuff.
Well, I mean, you see a bit of the brainwashing in the show as well. Like as soon as Dunbar gives her thing to the DOJ, her deposition, that goes out to the public, and the news immediately begins spinning it against her.
Right? Yeah, instead of just taking this as information, let's see how it turns out. It's like, oh, what a bunch of bullshit. Can you believe she's attacking the president while she's like that?
She's callously pressing her own advantage. Like, all that shit, when that's not, in fact, what she was trying to do.
Yeah.
Although, I see why they spun it that way. It looks pretty bad. It's a bad look, Dunbar, and I think you fucked up hardcore there. And I think she has run a pretty sad-ass campaign the entire time.
Well, it's almost like they're...
She's lucky to be in the running at this point.
Well, I mean, but that's interesting because I wonder if House of Cards, and I don't know. I mean, that's something I know we've talked about over the seasons. Like, is it fundamentally optimistic or pessimistic look at American life?
Right.
Because at this point, it'd be more interesting for me to see them run a forthright good politician and actually have them win. Because every time someone tries to, it's kind of like in Spaceballs, like evil will always triumph over good because good is dumb. Like, good is just fucking completely incapable of defeating evil because, you know, evil will lie and manipulate and good will be like, yeah, I did that and here's my reason. And nobody listens to the reasons. It's all, oh, you admitted to it.
Right. And that there are parts of this chunk of episodes here that really twist me up because, like when Dunbar's talking to her campaign manager, she's like, you care about the law, which is why you need to become president, which she's essentially saying, which is why you need to break the law to become president.
Sure.
Which, how do you change? I don't know that you can change a system like that, because to get into the system, you have to abandon your values in the first place.
Yeah.
Now, maybe you can retain some sense of propriety, some sense of ethics going into a system like that through a campaign. Maybe. But once you get in there, how do you change the system? Because everyone else is playing that game. And for you to win at that game, it almost requires you to give in and become the problem with the system. So, yeah. Where do you go?
I mean, I don't know. It's like one of those things where, is it possible to break the rules just this one time to get a decisive advantage and win and then go back to your principles to defeat evil?
Right.
I guess it's possible, but you only hear about the people that get caught because I put my hand in a cookie jar and got a free cookie. Next time I'm going to get two. Next time I'm going to get three. It keeps getting better until you take so many that you get busted.
And time and time again, the show has shown people wanting to do the right thing and get into this, and eventually they're forced into decisions they don't like.
Jack and Remy are currently going through this arc.
Exactly. And it just, that system chews these people up and spits them out.
I mean, Donald Blythe has always been that. Like, he's the well-meaning guy who wants to get ahead, and he is nothing but a tool.
Right. Right. I mean, he even got to the VP of the position. Yeah. So I don't know. That stuff.
They made it a point to show that Frank got his liver from a kid who shot himself with a shoddily secured handgun.
Yeah.
Do you think that gun violence has been big in the American politic of lately? Do you think the show is going to use Frank being shot and also Frank being saved by a person who got shot as a way to make some kind of point on gun violence?
I don't see that.
It's hard to say the
yet.
House of Cards makes a point about anything, but do you think that that's definitely going to be one of the next hot button issues that it taps into?
I hadn't considered it.
Because I kept on thinking, why are they showing me this? Why did they see fit to show me this particular butterfly fly flap? And the only thing I think of is that it's kind of an interesting symmetry that a president's life is put in danger with a gun and it's saved with a gun.
Yeah, it's interesting. I haven't seen an indication that they're going that direction yet.
Okay.
At the end of episode 6, but who knows? Maybe they will. Although I have to say, getting shot might actually be the best thing to happen to Frank's campaign.
No shit.
Because I think he was basically down and out.
I do too. He had no response for this Claire situation either.
Absolutely. Whereas getting shot put all that on the back burner. It got them, I think, back together, at least.
We'll talk about that.
At least in name.
But here's the thing, like, as it seems like there's sin, there's a couple things.
But it killed Dunbar's campaign.
Right, it did.
It let Claire kill Jackie's campaign, essentially. I mean, they've got that photographic evidence.
They own her at this point.
Yeah. And does Jackie really have a chance against Frank? Come on.
Well, no, she's not running. She's not running for press. She threw her endorsement behind Dunbar. Wait. Is it Dunbar? Who's
Dunbar's the lawyer, yeah.
Okay, because the Durant, I get Dunbar
Kathy,
and Durant.
Yeah.
She threw her weight behind Dunbar, and she's just running for her own seat in Texas right now.
Oh, okay.
But she's also the whip, I believe. She's Frank's old position.
I think so, yeah.
So she's a very powerful ally to have, even if she's being used against her will. But with all these good things happening, I did notice a little bit of, like, oh, I don't know how this is going to play, when Claire, instead of coming back for her husband's surgery and liver transplant, says, I can better serve my country. And I don't know how that's going to play out.
Yeah, it's not going to look good not being with him on the campaign.
No, especially when, you know, she's given a lot of good speeches, kind of, playing the conventional first lady. I don't know that you can do both. You can't be the first lady and also the vice president that you're trying to audition for, I guess.
So I did read that scene correctly. Yes, the very last one in episode 6 where they're sitting in the White House talking, and Frank says that he wants them to be together as a couple, not necessarily as her supporting his campaign, right?
Well, so she says, I can't come back and be first lady.
Yeah.
And he goes, not that, not that, which I took to mean, like, look, the vice president thing's not going to work.
Yeah.
But now I actually hear what you're saying, and we can get on the same page. But it can't be the vice president.
Okay. I read that as,
or
as
maybe
you're
going
to be my wife, but you don't need to be the quote-unquote first lady anymore. Like, you don't need to... thing.
You'll have a bigger role. I'm not sure what it is. Maybe it is the vice president, but the way he said not that, not that, it's like, no, look, the vice president's not going to work, but I hear you now, and I want to work with you to get you as big a piece of pie as I've got, and I don't know what that looks like.
But, and how do you feel about this turnaround from Frank after his visions and shit? Because we've seen this before from Frank.
Sure. I feel like it's entirely within his character to have this near-death experience and all these visions and weird shit, and also to hear firsthand testimony of how Frankie and his wife became, like, that's exactly the play he would make. And I think he has, I mean, that's the thing, like, everyone could see except for Frank how important she was to his presidency.
Sure.
And the way he said, I now see, like, I thought you were nothing without me, I now realize the, I think that's a genuine revelation, because it's something we've realized last season and he's just now catching up to it.
Right. I just never quite trust Frank's revelations.
Well, sure.
Because I always trust him to go back on his word.
Yes.
And, those are the repeated behavior patterns I've seen. Now, maybe it's a genuine change this time. Maybe his near-death experience has changed him.
Maybe that kid that blew his head off was just, you know, like a real girl power feminist. And it's one of those situations where he's got that liver inside him now, and it's pumping the respect your wife bile through your system. Uh-huh. It's like, you know, remember those old... like there's a horror movie where someone gets a heart transplant from a serial killer, and right, they become a serial killer, shit like that.
But I think Claire also got a little bit of a taste of what Frank goes through, right? She says, look, sure, this thing was hard. It was harder than I thought it'd be.
Yeah.
So I kind of understand your side of the equation a little bit better too.
Well, not, it's almost like I understand why you get tunnel vision, like, right, where I would be a distraction and a pain in your ass rather than an ally.
Yeah, and the way she had to manipulate Jackie and Remy and, like, all of that kind of stuff, she got a little bit of a taste and a little bit of perspective on it. I don't know that she really, like, that's the thing she needed. I don't feel like she was lacking that the whole time. But she espoused that.
That's the other thing that makes me nervous, is that Kathy Durant is just getting run roughshod over by Claire.
Yeah.
That can't be good. You're building up a lot of antagonism. Same thing with Jackie, like,
yeah,
and also Petrov. Petrov can, I don't, does Petrov like the fact that Claire strolled in there and broke him?
I don't think he likes it, but I think he's accepted it.
I mean, he likes it in the way that Don Draper every once in a while liked being slapped around by a woman.
Okay.
Like, there's something, like, almost psychosexual going on with him.
Mm-hmm. But only certain women, right? Petrov's not going to tolerate this from anyone other than Claire.
No, right.
Yeah.
But he's fascinated with her, and I don't know that that's a good thing for her, a bad thing for her. Like,
right,
is he going to be able to go back to dealing with Frank now?
Well, he's going to have to.
Yeah, well,
so
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's the things I'm worried about him. We already talked about... now, when he wanted to stand up and start walking, did you think he was going to go find Meacham's handprint? Because that's the first thing I thought he was going to do.
No, I thought he was just going to try and walk, but...
Okay.
But I really like that handprint thing. I think...
We didn't talk about that, now we're talking... But I thought that was going to be a more important part. I'm like, I thought he was going to go back and kind of put his hand over...
Because right.
Meacham has become
the threechum.
Yeah, Meacham has become this important thing to him.
Yeah, there's some kind of... I don't know if it's the trust he's able to put in Meacham when he can't trust anyone else, or if it's just some kind of other emotional connection to Meacham. But yeah, for some reason, that's the guy.
It's weird because, like, I feel like he thinks he knows he has Doug's unwavering loyalty.
That's true. Yeah.
And love. Mm-hmm. I don't think Frank loves Doug back.
Okay.
Whereas Meacham, yeah. I think Meacham, he actually loved Meacham.
I don't know why, though. Like,
I don't, I.
There was the threechum, but that's just, that's physical, man.
I don't know.
That doesn't say love to me. That
Meacham
says,
was always there for him.
It's true, yeah. And he, but I feel like Stamper always was, too. He always had his back.
Yeah, but Doug is like a lizard. It's like I, you know, do the dudes that have iguanas, do they really love their iguanas, or are they just being a freaky iguana dude?
That's a fair question.
So I've come at the liver people. I've come at you, iguana. You own a tarantula. I'm coming for you, too. Do you really love that tarantula? Or do you just like being a freaky tarantula guy?
Right. No, I feel like, and does the tarantula, like, love you back?
Yeah, like Meacham is the fuzzy puppy, and Doug is the iguana.
Okay.
That you drape around your shoulders to freak people out.
I want to talk about this handprint, though, because I really like that moment between them. It's,
yeah, no.
It's a side of the president that you always kind of hear about in real-life presidents.
Sure.
Where they're playful, and they have their moments,
yeah.
Right, between crises.
When they're not in front. And that, I thought that's an interesting thing this episode did, too, is they always show Frank when he's being presidential. He's at his maximum artificialness.
Right.
But when he's acting in his role as the president, he's at his absolute, like, most warlord, demonic asshole.
Uh-huh.
But then there's this moment where it's like, if you stripped away this and he was just a dude.
Yep.
He was just a dude, and he never got into politics, and he stayed as a peach farmer. This is the kind of guy he would be.
Yeah, and it's one-on-one. There's no pretense. It's just...
He had shacked up with his boyfriend at the Citadel. They had been gay peach farmers. Bisexual peach farmers.
I don't know. I mean, the Georgia looks down on that, right? South Carolina, wherever he's
from.
Man,
gay. You can find gay people anywhere.
Sure, you can.
Even certainly. In like countries where it's like the
death
sentence.
And if he's just a dude, I guess there wouldn't be as much consequence socially for that. Sure.
Yeah. They'd just be bachelors. They'd be bachelors living on their peach plantation.
Yeah, we're just eating peaches together.
Yeah, it's
all
like
day
Batman and Robin. There's nothing weird about that.
Right. But the other thing I thought was interesting is he pulls down a Confederate flag painting off the wall, which has got to tie into the real life South Carolina Confederate flag hubbub, right?
I don't know. I mean, to the extent that any of this does, sure.
Yeah. That's what I immediately thought of. I was like, oh, they're doing a nod to the real life.
However, I've
got to
say that, like, if somebody came after Frank for having a painting that shows the Confederate flag sinking into oblivion.
Yeah.
And they'd use it against, like, fuck you, man. That's like, that's not the way this shit works. You don't, like, I'm all for, like, hey, the rebel flag is, I don't care what you personally think of it, mm-hmm. It is a symbol of racism and oppression.
Right.
To everybody.
And it's like if someone were...
So you are, if your non-racist, non-oppressive use of that... is coming across the rest of the world as racist, oppressive, then what does that say about your mindset and your care about fellow man?
Right.
Whereas, if you know, this is a painting of the flag being destroyed.
I mean, I'm not having an argument about the ethics, but it would be funny if someone were to, you know, point that out and say, oh, Frank's a racist for having this picture or something. It's like
pointing to
a guy who's burning a Confederate flag and saying, he's got a Confederate flag. What a racist.
Well, like the one professor that got fired for saying the word niggardly. It's like,
oh, my God.
Right. You know, like, there's being sensitive, and there's also just being fucking ignorant.
You realize you're going to have to deal with a lot of emails now.
Look it up, people.
I know.
It has it's like, you know, it's...
It's a word.
Educate yourself. I ask plenty of ignorant people to educate themselves on the podcast all the time. You know, if you have a painting of the only appropriate display of the rebel flag is to have it sinking into oblivion.
With maybe a lightning bolt striking it?
Maybe a lightning bolt is allowed to strike the sinking, the battle flag of the whatever.
All right.
So, I think there's a couple other topics I want to talk about. There were satellite fringe things that didn't really fit anything. We debated about whether Claire's daddy liked Francis. Apparently, Claire's daddy loved Francis.
I guess so.
Surprising?
Not really. I mean, that was what I was operating under the whole time. So
this is the second time in episode 4 that that Claire's mother has conspicuously killed a lizard. Is this really? Yeah. With her broom. She's done it twice.
Okay.
And then Claire even finally, if you missed it the first time, Leanne's like, what's that? She's like, it's my mother killing a lizard.
Yeah, I caught that one. I didn't catch the first one.
Going with my iguana theory.
Uh-huh.
And the fact that, like, Claire's mom also said, I hope he dies, and their general antipathy towards each other, is Claire's mom going to be involved in a lizard killing operation? Either somehow involved in Frank or Stamper? Doug or...
I can't those guys imagine. I mean, she's
But where
sick,
are they going
she's...
with the lizard killing, man? You're telling me that, like, twice in four episodes? That means something.
You're right.
This might be my dead man's brew. My grandma's no... lizard killing. That's my theory.
You're right. It's conspicuous. I have no fucking idea why they're doing it.
What do you think that they were trying to convey? They had this beautiful shot of Claire when Frank is getting ready to come out of the hospital, and they're doing the residential quarters of the White House all up as a, you know, convalescence unit.
Uh-huh.
And she goes into her bedroom and curls up on that couch, and she's this very small in this huge room.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's weird because, like, they never really show Frank in that kind of same vulnerability.
Yeah, I wonder if that's just her realizing he's back and feeling not great about that.
Yeah, because it definitely seemed like there was mixed emotions about him fully recovering.
I think so. I mean, she obviously, right before that, wanted a divorce and was set to do it. I don't think she wanted him to be back, and the fact that, like, it's in her face now. Mm-hmm. Here's the bed. He's going to be here very soon. Now she's back to where she was. It kind of sucks for her.
I want to talk about Seth and Doug a little bit. What do you think about their relationship?
You mean with trying to fire him?
Well,
with Seth coming back and
first of all, I like Seth. Like when he was
How
dealing.
How can you
with,
trust Seth at this point?
I guess you make him think that. I guess Doug has to think that he has him completely cowed.
Okay,
but I don't.
It just constantly carry a glass with you,
right? Right. just rattle some ice.
Uh huh.
I don't know, because I feel like in the real world, so much of this blackmailing just wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Someone would be like, fuck this shit. I'm out. I'm taking you with me.
I don't know why you bring a guy like Seth back into the fold, honestly. Because he's already proven he's not loyal, so...
He did have the funniest moment, though, when he's going over the press corps, and he's saying, like, you know, I only want facts, and I don't want to deal with rumors, and some guy's like, I just got an email from a college student saying the Secret Service fired first, and he's like... What did I just say? Do not waste my time with this bullshit. And then, like, peaced out. That cracked me up.
Okay.
Oh, man.
I don't remember that part.
I hate it when I think something's funny and you don't.
The audience might. Just can't hear the reaction.
Also,
I've got some other stuff I want to talk about.
The return of government-issued face, man.
Okay. Right. Right,
he's the one that broke the news that Seth was the asshole. He was the leaker. He's the one sitting across, looking smug from Dunbar. I liked the Dick Tracy face coming back. I like it
totally. That nose, man. What has gone wrong there?
It's you know, the government. They contract their faces out to the lowest bidder, man. That's what happens.
Yep.
Let's see. What I do think that Doug attacking Seth and threatening him and with his life felt very Frank.
Okay,
that's Frank setting the razor blade and the aspirin and the cold water on Russo's bathtub and saying, you know, either slit your fucking wrists or be a man. I feel like he's done that. You know, it's the when he first called Russo into his office and put his crotch right in his face and said, "I want your absolute, unswerving obedience and loyalty." It felt very Frank.
Yeah, but I mean, it also feels very Stamper too. Mm. He's a man of action.
True.
I don't know.
What do you think about Remy and this Jackie situation? Why?
So I'm not super engaged in this. I thought the Remy Jackie stuff was kind of just done. I don't know. I'm not sure where she fits in exactly, and I don't really care that much.
I care. I like Jackie, but I'm confused.
I like them both, yeah.
Because I thought they were going for her to be kind of like the good person. And then they kind of made her out to be the bad person. And then I thought that her removing her tattoos is a reinforcement of that theme. But But now she's the one that's kind of horrified that she has to get in bed with the Underwoods again. But is she horrified because she finds them personally distasteful, or is it humiliating for her? Because it
might
like
be both.
Her ethics and morals, I don't understand.
Yeah, I think she abandoned those a long time ago.
And why is she so angry with Dremi? Because she ultimately, I mean, that's the thing. The fundamental thing I understand about this plot line is she seems to be outraged that Remy is allowing himself to be blackmailed to protect her.
Right.
And yet we see her do the same thing when Claire confronts her.
Yeah.
You know, Claire's like her whole line, like, you can't blame me for taking advantage of your sloppiness. And she just like, I thought that that was going to be the point where she realizes, oh, I understand why Remy did the things he's doing now, because I'm just as afraid. And yet she does the passive-aggressive congratulations text and not return take his phone call at the end.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, I do like Jackie and Remy, but I think their storyline at the moment is the least engaging to me of all the lines.
All right. We got feedback.
Wait. Oh. There's some other stuff I want to talk about.
Okay.
Who are you rooting for in this show anymore? Anybody? Because I thought for a while that I was rooting for Claire. I still sort of am, but not really. I don't want any of these people to win because they're all bad people.
That's but the thing is like, I'm not sure I can put my finger on why exactly I jumped off at Claire's ship.
Yeah, same here.
Part of it is like I think I wouldn't have if I'd have fully understood her plan and was convinced of its brilliance, and now I feel like I'm never going to know.
I don't want anybody to win. I don't want Stamper to win. I don't want Dunbar to win. I don't want anybody to win. Dunbar is the closest, I guess, but she's not going to win.
Is this show going to have me rooting for the Republicans?
Maybe. It might.
I mean, I'm like the best guy for the job. Like, I don't really give a shit about political affiliation. Mm-hmm. I'm more concerned with what I feel like you're going to do as far as, you know, what's right and whatnot. But
yeah. You know who I'm rooting for?
What?
The Hammer.
I was going to say, I'm rooting for the American people.
Well, in a way, that's the Hammer.
Sure.
I feel like I'm rooting for journalism. I'm rooting for truth. I'm rooting for justice.
Because, yeah, this kind of corruption, it's no way for a free society to. I mean, you're not.
I agree, but
you're almost living in the Matrix world, man.
Right.
You think you have the rule of law that protects you, and ultimately it's a kleptocracy. It's like this. It is. It's very Matrixy.
And then Agent Smith is rubbing sweat off your face and licking it.
Sure. You don't want that.
The other thing that I want to talk about is,
okay,
with Frank getting shot, it was interesting because maybe we should save this for later. But the chief tension for me was not like whether or not he'd die. I know that was there. But it was more like, how badly will shit get fucked up before Frank can deal with it? Like, what's going to happen? Is the office going to full-on implode with Donald Blythe at the head and Stamper and Claire battling it out? Like, shit started to get real dark for a second.
I guess that's where I kind of went off on Claire because, you know, and that kind of Frank has disappointed me is Naked Ambition's all well and good to get you to where you want to go. But what is, and now that you have the power, the whole point is of having power is to wield it to make some kind of effective change in the world.
Right.
Because else you're just jerking off.
But I feel like Frank a lot of the time does that. He just wants
power. And that's why,
like,
I kind of got dissatisfied with him last season. Yeah. And I think why I'm off for Claire is because when she got this chance, I guess it's the best way forward, but it felt to me like she was just calling audibles for the sake of putting her own stamp on something, and she's willing to roll the dice with worldwide security to do that.
Who calls her on that? Somebody calls her on that.
Probably is Kathy.
They say,
this
you want this because it's your plan. It might have been Petrov.
Hmm. Oh, yeah.
I think it was
Petrov.
He did. Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
So
that.
He realized that, and that's, you know, the power for power's sake sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe that's where I leapt off the Claire platform, too.
And I guess that's what I thought. Like, you know, I always thought Frank was like, he's ruthless attaining power, but, like, he's going to do it for some purpose, where it seems like, no, he's just accumulated his power, and now he doesn't know what to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah. The other question I have is, what do you think the path forward for Claire is here? I don't know that she... Like, certainly she can divorce him now, but I think that'd be a terrible move politically.
I don't think necessarily know that she wants to. And the thing, like, a lot of this stuff seemed like, ultimatums to bring someone to the table more than I'm unhappy on the face of it and I want out. It's more like, you're not hearing me anymore. I need to make you hear me. So I don't know that she... I don't know. What is the authentic Claire? Is authentic Claire the one that says she wants a divorce, or is it the one... I mean, obviously she was telling Francis what he wanted to hear when she was talking about how they built this from... But that's also, I think, said from some place of honesty, or it wouldn't have worked so well.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting because, like you said, her plans are shot to hell at the with the gunshot of Lucas. So,
yeah,
we'll see.
Hey, everybody, just want to talk about a couple things happening on Bald Move. We are starting our Daredevil coverage this week and next. We're gonna have we actually did coverage of two episodes that were commissioned. We're gonna wrap that up and use that to get our feed started. We're also then going to have a preview of the new season coming out next week, because next Friday, whole season two of Daredevil drops, and we're going to do that like we did season three of House of Cards. So we'll have the first episode out that Friday, and the new episodes out every Monday, Wednesday, Friday until we're finished with it. Mm-hmm. Really excited. We love season one. Very excited about another big hit on Netflix. I can't wait to get started on that. If you want to send feedback into that for the preview cast, you can send that to daredevil@baldmove.com. Also wanted to mention club.baldmove.com. If you like what we're doing here with House of Cards, realize the only way we could ever do it is because we're doing this as a full-time job. Podcasting on television and movies and entertainment for your enjoyment. You can support us at club.baldmove.com. This week we have exclusive to club members, our spoiler-filled review of 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Oh yeah,
which you want to see on Thursday night, and we'll have that podcast out Friday. Everybody gets the non-spoiler general review, but the spoiler deep dive is going to be something we save just for club members. So it's cheap. It's as little as $1 a month if you subscribe for the whole year, and you get a lot of bonus content, which you can find all that information at club.baldmove.com. Email. We got quite a bit of email, as I expected for some kind of bombshell episode. You can send email to houseofcards@baldmove.com, or get on the forums. We got episode by episode discussion thread that people are making use of. If you do send an email, please mention the chapters or episode numbers that you're making the email on, so I can kind of organize them and sort through them. And I haven't seen the whole series yet, so I'm trying to avoid spoilers as well. Anyway, Eric B. said, I cannot stand to hear Aaron pronounce Neve Campbell's first name Neve when 300 million other Americans pronounce it Nev. I know you like to pronounce things your own way, but you got to fix this.
Yeah, you're pissing into the wind on this one.
No, Cecily met me at the door as like, it's Nev, asshole. So I apparently hit a nerve.
Yeah, I mean, I've been a fan for a while now, so I knew that. But trying to get Aaron,
I fucking hate the English,
to pronounce any names correctly is pissing in the wind.
I hate the English language. Why here is pronounced here, but Neve is pronounced Nev? Why can't here be hair? Like, it doesn't make any goddamn sense.
Right.
I really hate it so much. I hate it so much.
You should learn Japanese.
Simpler. Wouldn't help me. I'm pretty sure their stuff. English is probably the most simple language, and I can't master it. So.
Oh, that's not true. That's no.
Do we need to get Esperanto in here? Klingon, Dothraki. Like, there's got to be some kind of constructed language where people didn't have their head up their ass, adopting every mongrel fucking spelling from the four corners of the earth.
It's called mathematics. You can speak in pure mathematics.
I'm just going to speak on the vibrations the hydrogen atom makes.
And
I'll just carry gold record around with me so everyone can translate. All right, Michael McBee said, holy shit, I have to say, the moment I heard the gunshot, I was floored, and some of my TV watching habits betrayed me. I kept expecting through the episode to find out it was a dream sequence or something to that effect, but no, it was a well-done episode in my eyes. My only thought is back to my prediction about the dream from the first episode, the one that might be the major peace break, or this one might be the major peace break to yet another round of fights between Frank and Claire. I'll disagree with you, Michael, because I'm over Frank and Claire fighting.
Okay.
Like, if Frank is really long conning Claire at this point to get lull her, and then he's going to strangle her in the final episode, like, I don't know about all that.
Well, so...
this only works for me if Frank had a genuine religious experience and he's come to Jesus / Claire and...
Right, but there's always the potential for him to backslide. I mean, that's the problem with Frank, is that he will have these moments of clarity, but he always backslides on him.
Yeah,
I don't think you need him to have a long con in the works. You can just have circumstances push him in a direction.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. They're pretty, like, that's the thing. I got to have him be sincere in that scene, and okay, later on he can be pushed to do something else.
Gotcha.
But, you know, I think the show works best when they have organic events that he has to flex and change with, rather than him just, you know, do I believe that he's setting up Claire for a failure as soon as he wakes from his liver surgery? No.
Right.
Speaking of that, we didn't talk about this. I guess we didn't have a problem with it. Did you have a problem with how fast he recovered from the liver surgery?
I get the impression that some time had passed.
Okay, me too. And the show's always kind of nebulous about that.
Right. It takes, like, what, 6 to 8 weeks to recover from major surgery? But
that's the thing. They're also in the middle, like, of Super Tuesday, and I guess the president won all those, and Dunbar's already in real trouble.
I guess
the passage of time was really nebulous for me on this one.
It was.
Claire's flying to Germany, and the president only had days to live. And
As long as they pick up kind of where they would probably be given the rate of his recovery, I'm okay with it.
Okay. Smycel 55 liked the episode, but says, "I just wish Netflix didn't announce that Kevin Spacey had been signed on for season 5.
Oh God, spoiler alert. This is what I was talking about, the spoiler problem with, like, the tension of whether will he die or won't he.
Well, now that it's over with, I feel like we can talk about it.
Right.
But I agree. I wish I didn't know that, because I already, like, it was effective enough that I started thinking, oh my God, is this going to, and then I realized, oh.
It shifts your focus to
it really does.
To how bad is it going to go?
Yeah.
While
how
he's
is he going
to
recover? Not if he's going to recover.
Yeah.
And I just don't know why they can't keep that shit under wraps, man.
I don't know.
Like, I get it. Like, shit's got to go out in the Hollywood Reporter and Variety, and contracts are negotiated and whatnot, but, like, it's really undercutting some of the golden age shows. Like, you know, Game of Thrones suffers from this, Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. Like, it's impossible to keep these secrets if a fan is even and it's like in the old days, like, I guess you'd have to read TV Guide or, like, get really up in some of these entertainment magazines to get spoiled like this. But now all it takes is one of your asshole friends to share something on Facebook, and you go from watching, seeing baby pictures to, oh shit, Kevin Spacey signed for, well, I guess he can't die of liver failure.
Yeah.
It's a problem, man. It's a problem. He continues, I have a big feeling that Doug's decision to manipulate the system, the my goddamn liver system, will bite him in the ass, and I'm glad to see Claire finally get something done, even if that means using her own manipulations and blackmail to get it. Frank was right. It's always been her, not the other way around, and I feel that Doug knows that too. Do you agree with any of those assertions? Do you think that Doug is going to pay a price for strong-arming the Secretary of Health to break the liver law?
No.
Me either.
I mean, Doug's done worse, and he's paid no price. Well, he's paid some prices.
Yeah, oh, sure.
He's been nearly beaten to death.
Yep.
He's paid some prices, but I don't think this is...
He's had to murder human beings. That's right. You know, some kind of cost on your...
Frankly, I don't think the Secretary of Health has dinner. The way she approached that situation, just sending
him
a picture.
She seems pretty mamby-pamby.
Yeah. She's not even a Rachel, let alone a Frank, you know?
Yeah, I agree. But do you think that Doug... That's the other, I guess, thing, the hanging chad here. What is Doug's feelings about the First Lady right now? Does he have a grudging respect for her?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I think he doesn't like her.
I think she's like, there's a telling line where she said, I can't believe that no one saw this threat to the president coming. And he goes, well, honestly, man, we've been focused more on you as our biggest threat.
Right.
And I feel like that nothing in these episodes dissuaded him of thinking that. And he's also, Doug's been on the odd, like, his season arc last year was Seth taking control, him being forced out, and him, like, trying to save the president from himself. Like, it's not the first time where Doug thinks he knows better than the president and tries to save him from whatever thing he's trying to do to kill himself. Or kill his chances, anyway.
Yeah.
Joanna K has a lot of stuff that I think you addressed a little bit, but I just wanted to go over it. You mentioned that the fact that Frank is all just blunt force this season in your last podcast and no sneak around, just a fist of power, not taking into account what he destroys. Again, you didn't specify whether you didn't like the writing choice or Frank's choice. Frank himself is unraveling. It's clear with his dreams and his daydreams, the blood in the sink, etc. I think we all enjoyed him using his tons of sneaky tactics in season one. That's because he could afford to use them. He had tons of time. He also needed to set the stage for his future moves that he would make. But now he is the president of the United States. The stakes are the highest of the entire series, and that's what the writers are using. I think it's great writing. The pot's been simmering, then at a low boil, and now it's boiling over with nowhere to go but over the sides. I think it's brilliant and inevitable.
I agree. Like I said, don't confuse me criticizing characters.
I'm disappointed in Frank Underwood.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the writers. Although right. I reserve the right to be disappointed with them too. Because,
sure. But
you know,
far so good. I'm not complaining.
Sure. I'm of two minds on whether the first three episodes of this season was a complete waste of my time.
Uh-huh.
Or whether it was a necessary rope-a-dope to sell the assassination. Like I said, I've got almost two identical or opposite minds of that.
Right, and I think either way you fall on that, you've got to at least understand Frank's mindset, like she's talking about, and you know he's mad, he's angry, he's making bad decisions.
She also compares and contrasts this with Claire's choice to run with Frank. She goes, "You guys went nuts against this. Obviously, the writers know that it is an insane choice in political suicide. There's definitely a catch and a reason. Again, it's coming across that you're throwing fault on the writing. I know some of these writers rather well. They know exactly what they're doing. And I think when you guys make these complaints, you should specify what exactly is irking you. The fact that the characters are batshit, which is a great thing, which means the show is affecting you, and when it's an overall problem with the show, writing, and direction."
It would get really old if I did that every time I said something about a character, though.
And also, the thing with the vice presidency is that seems like it's a null plot point now.
Yeah.
But at some point, a character advancing, a smart, intelligent character advancing a crazy proposition to another smart, intelligent, calculating character does seem like bad writing. It's right. Such a nakedly so farcical absurd. Decision that no yeah. one can take it seriously, not even in the show's universe. So, like, what was her plan?
Right.
I'm slightly frustrated that I'll not know that now.
Yeah, and I mean, I was partially criticizing it for that. I think for Claire to suggest that, it means one of two things: that she has either lost her goddamn mind,
yep,
or she has another plan, and this is part of it.
That I'm not privy to, which right. I can't judge as cleverness or not.
Right, right. And if she has lost her freaking mind and actually thinks that she can win a vice presidential candidacy with Frank, I think that's bad writing because I think Claire is smarter than that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know where that was going or if it will eventually get there, but that was pretty absurd to me.
Now, I said that my bias is that I think when Frank said, no, not that, that he was talking about the vice presidency. Having said that, do you see a place where this show can pivot to where Claire has, you know, because everyone's knocking her about her lack of experience and her failures, and can she spin this win in Russia and the fact that she was essentially the prime minister of the United States while Frank was in liver failure? Mm-hmm. Can she spin that? And all the insiders know it.
Mm-hmm.
Can she spin that into a viable vice presidency now? Do you think the show will eventually go down that? Because I still think the whole relate,
maybe
like what Seth said, like less than 10% of the American people think that a vice president should be a blood relation, period, let alone husband and wife.
Right. I mean, you come at it from... I've heard many people comparing Claire to like Donald Trump. Oh, how can you say that someone with no experience could never get elected into an office? That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying the impropriety, the nepotism involved in running your own wife as your vice president, combined with the idea that she has no prior political experience.
Yes,
that's the death knell for that.
Yeah, candidacy. It wasn't any one thing. It was all the things put together.
Right. So. Can she spin? I don't think she's done enough at this point to spin it. I still think that's too big of a hill to climb. I can't see them going there.
But the Donald Trump thing is instructive in that it shows that the American people will throw those objections out the window for a particular candidate that they believe in. So if the show can sell us that for some reason the American people really get behind Claire Underwood, that they, even though it's a stunt and a joke and weird, that they're still like, hell yeah, and I love it. Like, I can see...
like Arnold Schwarzenegger as governor.
Yeah, it sometimes it happens.
It does,
man.
Happen, but here, so
Jesse Ventura, Jesse the Body Ventura, was the governor of Minnesota.
Some state. Yeah, whatever.
He fucking paratrooped in on his first day. Like, there, sometimes farcical things happen, and not just America, around the world.
Right, and I have a personal bias against this particular thing because, like, I'm kind of okay with someone who doesn't have much, if any, political experience getting involved and trying to change it from the outside, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. What I'm not cool with is that kind of nepotism. Like, that is insane to me.
Well, it's not just...
So I'm personally biased against that particular plot line.
But it's and not just you. There's like there's something for everybody. She's a woman. Right. That's going to be a dead... And I'm not saying it's
sure.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a issue for a vast swath of the population. The fact that she's
She has
his
so
wife,
much working against her.
The fact that she's got no experience. The fact that the little experience she has was... where the president forced her on and then she failed at.
Public failure. Yeah, it's bad
she's
news.
She doesn't have... So the fact that she's not a family woman is going to be another complete non-starter for a lot of other people.
Yeah.
Like, it's a vast coalition of people that wouldn't want to see Claire Underwood be the vice president, which is what Seth was
saying.
It's essentially
it's
90% of the American people.
Right, and it's so absurd that she would suggest that. So,
and then when Frank was like, well, can't we move the needle? And Seth's like, what, 40%? Because that's what you'd have, and like that's what you're up against.
Yeah.
So, anyway, yeah. Sierra P has the opinion, please, can they not kill Remy? I need at least some eye candy on this show, and God knows what happened to Peter and Meacham. I feel bad for Meacham. I was so happy for him being sucked back in a pot. Oh, I'm sorry. She's talking about Remy. I feel bad for Remy, though. I was very happy to see him sucked back into politics when he clearly isn't interested anymore.
Donald Blythe is single. Huh? Huh?
There's some eye candy. There's some man candy for you. He's the ribbon candy of eye candy.
Oh, God.
He is the black jelly bean of
right.
eye candy.
Yeah. The ones you pick out of the bowl and throw away.
Yeah, yeah. I feel bad for Kathy. She's, of course, had to do unethical things for Frank, but I also feel like she's tried to do her job and just wants to be respected and not undermined by Claire constantly. I do feel it's pretty bad because she is a competent, smart person of her own right, and she's just being rode roughshod by Claire. She continues, Petrov and Claire have super interesting chemistry. He really knows what to say to fuck with her, but she held herself very well. Where is this going, man?
I don't know.
They've been
starting at the kiss, it's just like, what the fuck?
They've been teasing something with them. And that's the thing, is like...
It's not romantic. It's definitely not romantic. It's
Do you think that there's no attraction between her and him?
No, but...
I feel like I'm bad for saying that there is a little bit, because he's been such an ass.
Right.
And, you know, committed sexual assault against her and disregarded her. But I also feel like that there is some kind of fascination with him.
Yeah, maybe fascination is the better word for it. It may not be a sexual thing. It may just be...
Or she's aware of the fact that he's using and turning the weapon against him, because...
She's definitely doing that, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she knows how to read this guy and how to play him. It's a really interesting tension with those two.
She continues, God damn, Frank has really aged through this. It's crazy how quickly that shit ages you. My dad had cancer and only needed 24 days of chemo, but he aged about 10 years that month.
Oh, I thought you meant the presidency, because that does too.
Well, I mean, so that's the thing that people say. Like, oh, look, right. It's always like, look at Bush before, look at Bush after,
look at
Obama
before,
look at after, look at Clinton. One thing I want to say is, like, well, it's 8 years.
True.
Take a person when they're in their mid-40s and then look at them in their mid-50s. Yeah,
unless you're Rob Lowe or John Stamos.
Yeah, there's a cliff that people fall off at a certain age where it's like you're fuckable and then
really,
no
if you're anybody on Fuller House, honestly, they all kind of held up well except for Danny.
Well, they kept him in shrink wrap.
Bob Saget went to shit, man.
He kept on working. Everybody else went to shrink wrap and was stored in the ABC warehouse like the Lost Ark.
Stamos got a little bit of the Entourage action.
That's true, he did.
It's, yeah.
Anyway, what was I saying? You completely derailed me, man.
Sorry.
But part of it is, yeah, I do think that the stress and the private, like, the, I imagine, well, how much sleep do you think the president gets?
Very little.
I mean, at George Bush, everyone said he got, like, a full 8 every hour, every day, but I don't know that was entirely serious. I just feel like you're always getting shitty sleep. Even if you're getting a full night's sleep, it's probably getting interrupted or,
yeah,
you know, you're worried. I mean, I feel like there's a lot of things that would age a person in dog years holding that office. Mm-hmm. She also has the opinion that Kevin Spacey is weirdly cuter with his full gray hair. It almost gives him a more boyish look, that mop of gray at the top of his head when they take a walk and talk. She loved that scene. Do you agree with that? Because I thought it was more of his hair not being slicked down at presidential.
Yep. I 100% agree with you there.
It's like Don Draper's office, and then you see Don Draper in the white tee in The Weeknd. He always looks younger and more boyish because...
Yeah. His hair is a little tousled, is that a word?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
She says, I'm actually really excited to see Underwood 2016. Eventually, a Claire presidency. If this show stays this good, I'm down with it lasting 5, 6, 7 seasons.
I went and I did a lot of research on the First Lady because Claire was running roughshod over Kathy this episode and advising Donald. And I was wondering, how accurate is that? Could the First Lady do this? Like, could she be brought on as
Nancy
an advisor?
Reagan did a lot of, like,
Hillary Clinton did a lot of this, too. And, like, it got me researching, like, oh, okay, Hillary Clinton was First Lady and she went to the Senate and all these, like, immolation laws. Immolation. Basically, ineligibility clauses in the Constitution.
Okay.
Where you can't serve in the Senate and have any kind of executive position at all.
Okay.
And the First Lady is an executive position. And
Is it?
Technically, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's an actual position within the federal government. Interesting.
Yeah. And then I was thinking about, oh, okay, well, it's weird, you know, with Hillary running, be interesting to have Bill Clinton, the former president, as the first
gentleman
of the White House. Yeah, like,
oh no, that's going to be
and
high
a former president. It's
that would be high.
That would be real interesting.
Yeah, from a social experiment angle. Honestly, this election cycle is going to be. There's nothing that can happen that won't be utterly fascinating.
You're right. You're right.
And that's where I'll leave it. Ryan M. said there's a couple of things that have kind of taken away of his enjoyment for House of Cards for a while. He says, item number one is the show Scandal. I don't know if you guys have ever watched it, but it's like a trashier, more female-driven House of Cards. Okay. Kerry Washington's character plays a DC fixer who helps powerful people out of sticky situations. She's been having an ongoing affair with the president on that show. It's completely batshit with the First Lady hooking up with the Vice President while the Vice President is plotting to overthrow the government. House of Cards has never quite hit the prestige level of television, but it's come damn close. With all these stupid nukes being lobbed back and forth between Frank and Claire, it's resembled a more expensive Scandal so far. Do you agree with that?
I've never seen Scandal, so I don't know.
I thought you had. That. Okay,
no,
oh shit.
No,
I was
my ex watched Scandal.
Okay, that's why I thought you knew a little bit more about it.
I mean, maybe through osmosis I got a little bit, but I've never seen it, and I don't know that I wouldn't count this as, like, top-tier television, honestly. I mean, not the toppest of top-tier.
Yeah.
But it's in that strata, and I think...
I think you got to call it prestige television. It wins. Yeah. It gets constant Emmy buzz. And
I'm prepared
to
do that.
Okay. Item the second is the real-life rise of Donald Trump. Jim said on the podcast it was patently absurd for Claire to think that she could just go from never having held public office to president. I had to laugh when he said that because Donald Trump had never held elected office, and apparently a huge portion of Americans don't seem to give a shit.
Right.
In fact, Claire Underwood is arguably more qualified to be president than Trump is. At least being a First Lady and United Nations ambassador is some kind of public service, something that Trump has never done.
Right, but that's like saying I would be, I don't know, qualified to be a firefighter because I had tried to put out a fire and it burnt my house down. Like,
yeah.
That's no experience. She failed miserably.
And there's a lot with, like we just said, there's a lot with Claire. I just wanted to read this
because
we got a lot of people saying that exact same example, and I wanted to give someone a voice to it.
It's true. If you limit it, like, strictly to the political office thing, yeah, I agree with you.
Sure.
It's insane. It's real weird that Donald Trump is doing what he's doing, but it's a thing.
Yep. Liz G., do you think that Frank asked Meacham to fire a shot when they were in a crowd at the college campus?
What? No. No, well, I don't think so. That's a hell of a theory.
The show does put it forth is as admittedly a crackpot idea, but there is the suggestion put forth that a student on campus reported the Secret Service fired first.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think it's insane, but sure.
Because that you're talking about a fishnado level coincidence of something they didn't intend, which is Lucas.
Well, I mean, you're
coming
talking
to shoot him with Frank telling Meacham to just fire a random shot to rile things up, and that had to happen at the exact same time.
I mean, what? Wait, read that question one more time.
Do you think that Frank, the president, asked Meacham, the Secret Service agent, to fire a shot when they were in the crowd on a college campus? If Lucas wasn't there, I would believe that. Lucas being there makes that
impossible. To cause a scandal?
Yeah, to get sympathy.
That's a terrible, terrible idea for Frank.
He's got some with all the dingers the last season or two.
I mean, this is 2016, Frank.
Sure.
Someone is going to see that Secret Service and have it on camera that guy shot first into an unarmed crowd. You're going to be brought up on charges if that's the case.
Well, I mean, it's not the first or last time he's done something that.
But it's so.
I agree.
Obvious.
I am kind of intrigued with the idea that someone's behind this and has maneuvered this, but it seems like it's such a far-fetched conspiracy-type plot that I can't find a shred of evidence in-universe to suggest it.
And I think once they get around to explaining that happened, it'll be too late to salvage that idea. I think it's got to just be Lucas acting on his own.
Is Frank being honest with Claire? Is he really going to support her bid to be vice president, or is he just saying what needs to be said to get her back in the White House?
I didn't think that's what he said.
The interesting... I mean, he's promising something, and that's, I think, the interesting question.
It is, yeah.
It's kind of like with Seth. How do you ever trust this person after they've said this one thing? Now, I mean...
Whenever
I'm deciding whether to evaluate a person's change and how I want them back in my life or out of my life, I always think, you know, like, what has changed? Well, Frank,
right.
The answer is easy. He had a near-death experience.
Pretty big change.
That can be formative for people.
Yeah.
Whether the change is lasting or not, but I do think in the moment he's being sincere.
Yeah.
Jeremy L. says, you guys have complained about the series stretching itself out more than it needs to, and I, for one, have to agree. I want to hear your opinion on the assassination attempt on Frank. Well, I must admit I didn't see it coming, and I find the following episodes engaging as Claire the Opportunist takes control of the White House through Donald Blythe. My question is, did you think the attempted assassination of Frank served the season well, or does it come off as a deliberate attempt by the writers to stretch the show out even further?
I liked it.
I felt like it almost saved the show.
Okay.
Because it injected a bunch of... It completely, like Claire said, if you don't like the way the table's set, flip over the table.
Jesus. Now you're going conspiracy on me again.
Why?
Claire's behind it
all. No. I'm just saying that Bo Willimon took his own character's advice and just flipped the table over in this season.
Uh-huh.
Sidelining Frank for essentially three episodes.
And here's the thing. I would only view it as stretching it out if they were treading water on plot, and I don't feel like they are.
No.
I feel like sidelining him gives Claire... It does make it a little confusing about the divorce thing. Like, what the hell was all that lead up for if they were just going to do this? But I think it gave so much room for Claire and Petrov to do their thing. It gave us room for Frank to have a change again. I feel like there was a lot of progression over these last few episodes.
I do too. And I honestly don't know where they're going now.
Yeah.
But you know, an excited, interested way, more and less in a complaining, whining way. Like, where are they going?
Yeah.
I'm like, man, where are they going? I can't wait to binge the next set of this. Mm-hmm. So that's all we got for feedback. If you'd like to send us more, houseofcards@baldmove.com. Again, please put in your episode or number or chapter name in the subject line or something, so I can know where to put it in our coverage. You can discuss it on forums.baldmove.com, and we'll be back this Friday with coverage of episodes 7, 8, 9
yep
of this season 4.
Yeah, so we'll see you then.